You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined by Rob Rang. Happy Wednesday to all of our listeners. Glad to have you listening in for a jam-packed show. It's been a crazy day in the NFL with CBA negotiations ongoing. Plenty of news, so let's get to it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Seattle still has questions left to be answered at tight end, but after signing Greg Olsen yesterday, the positive news just keeps on trickling in. According to Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, the Seahawks expect Will Dissly will be ready to go for week one, coming back from a torn Achilles tendon. Rob, this is huge news. Even with Olsen being signed as a hedge, assuming no setbacks, this is the one good thing about his injury happening as early as it did. It gave him a large window for recovery. Sounds like he is right on track, and he's got 5 months left until training camp, so they won't have to rush him coming back from this serious injury.
Yeah, I think that it just kind of goes back to the why that Seattle signed Greg Olsen in the first place is because you're just seeing how important the tight end position is to Seattle's offense in terms of what they've done in the past and what they hope to do in the future. Now with Greg Olsen and Will Dissly both, expected to be ready to play in week one, then I think that just sets up that much better. For Seattle. We talked about this yesterday, Corbo, just the impact that the tight end position can have in trying to minimize an opposing pass rush. That's, I think, one of the biggest reasons why is because again, Seattle is very much looking to counter what the 49ers have, what the Rams have, and what the Cardinals have, actually, in their pass rush as well. So I think that this is terrific news, obviously, for the Seahawks, terrific news for Will Dissly, and something that the Seahawks fans should be really excited about.
Really, nobody should be happier about this news than Russell Wilson. You look back at the 5 games that Will Dissly played. He actually played in 6, but he got hurt early in that game against the Cleveland Browns. He had 23 receptions, 262 yards, and 4 touchdowns in the first 5 games. He was having arguably an all-pro caliber season if you looked at those first 5 games. You know he brings it as a blocker, and he was putting up gaudy numbers as a receiver. He was Russell Wilson's favorite target during those first 5 games. And Rob, there's some glaring discrepancies. If you really want to see just how important the tight end position and Will Dissly in particular was to Seattle's offense, the first 5 games of the season, Russell Wilson completed 70% or more of his passes in 4 of those 5 games. The other game, he was at a respectable 64%, 12 touchdown passes with a third of those going to Dissly, no interceptions, quarterback rating of 126.3, and averaging over 9 yards per attempt. That's why Russell Wilson, the first 5 weeks of the season, was viewed as the front runner for MVP. A large part of it was having Will Dissly as his prime target, and then when Dissly went down, you could really see the impact he had on this offense with Wilson's production still being good, but it just was not near as good in a number of different metrics for the final 10 games of the season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's staggering, the difference in numbers, as you said. I mean, 12 touchdowns, 0 interceptions with Dissly, 19 touchdowns, 5 interceptions without Dissly. Just the fact that Wilson's completion percentage drops 10 points. There's so many numbers that can back up what all of our eyes saw. That Russell Wilson, as dynamic as he was and as impressive as the play of his primary pass catchers as it evolved throughout the season, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, as impressive as they were, no one was as consistent as Dissly, and no one proved to be that security blanket. And it's not just the statistics, but just the fact that it just seemed like every time that Russell Wilson needed a big play, then Dissly was the guy that he was looking for. And again, that's one of the reasons why I was so excited about the addition addition of Greg Olsen, because he was exactly that same type of player the Carolina and in previously in Chicago, and hell, going back to his college days at Miami. You know, he just is a terrific player who has great body control and excellent hands. And, you know, he's not the speedster that he once was, but he still is a very crafty route runner. And I'm essentially could be describing either Olsen or Disley. And to me, that is what makes this a very exciting day for Seattle fans.
Kind of expanding on a few of the numbers you threw out there, I mentioned with Disley, 73% completion rate. It was 63% in the 10 games without Will Disley in the lineup. The touchdown interception ratio, most quarterbacks in the league are going to take 19-5. That's still a very, very good touchdown interception ratio. But Wilson was on fire at the start of the season with 12 touchdowns and no picks. Passer rating goes down almost 30 points. It went from 126.3 to 97.7. So numbers across the board just weren't near as good without Disley in the lineup. And Wilson had three games where his completion percentage was 52% or less without Disley in the lineup, as I mentioned. First five games of the season, even when you add the one game he got injured at Cleveland, Wilson completed almost 70% of his passes in that game. So he just played at a different level when he had Will Disley out there. And no offense to Jacob Hollister, he did some great things this year, but this team just was not the same offensively without him. If they can keep him and Greg Olsen healthy, that's a big if given their injury histories, but if they can keep both of those players healthy, that's a dynamic duo of tight ends that really fits this offense well, and they're going to get plenty of opportunities because defenses are going to have to focus on Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. So expect Disley and Olsen to be a big part of Seattle's passing game. A big question mark for this team now could be a strength as long as they can keep those guys healthy. When we return from the break, the linebacking group was one of Seattle's best last season. We'll look back at the group as a whole and examine what's next rolling into 2020. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is Corbin Smith along with Rob Rang. Later in the third quarter, we'll be breaking down our next prospective free agent, Jermaine Ifedi. We'll be checking out the market for him and his chances of coming back to Seattle when free agency opens next month. Let's talk linebackers, Rob. This was Seattle's best positional grouping, in my opinion, and no surprise there. Pete Carroll expected before the season this was going to be an area of strength for this team. That's why they were in their base defense so much. He wanted his best 11 players on the field, and he felt that was with three linebackers out there, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, and Michael Kendricks.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree that this is the, you know, Seattle's best positional group, at least on, you know, last year's roster. You know, it remains to be seen if it's going to be broken up a little bit with Michael Kendricks, with, you know, coming off the ACL tear and is a pending free agent himself. You know, Bobby Wagner is still locked up for a couple of years. KJ Wright is entering his final year of his current deal. But, you know, you look at the statistics, you look at, you know, just the consistency that all three of those linebackers, you know, offered. You know, Kendricks was a little inconsistent as a tackler at times, and obviously coming off the injury, you have some concerns there. But just they were about as reliable as it gets in the NFL. You know, in Seattle is fortunate to have talented, durable linebackers of that nature.
Bobby Wagner, we got to start off the linebacker discussion with the now five-time first-team All-Pro, and there were some people out there that were critical of him earning that selection. I'm not in that category. I don't think it was his best season necessarily, but he was still an elite linebacker out there, and I'm still going to make the argument, you and I have talked about this, I think some schematic things put him at a disadvantage this year in coverage, which is why he gave up an 80% completion rate in coverage, 657 yards on 58 completions, 2 touchdowns, when he was in coverage. So not near as productive in that area of his game, but I feel like schematically the Seahawks put him in much tougher positions this year. And Pete Carroll talked about that several times during the season. The way they were running the defense, it put more on him and it made it tougher for Bobby Wagner. But he still led the NFL with 159 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 6 passes defensed. And you got to see what this defense looked like without him at the end of that Carolina Panthers game, when Carolina, with a backup quarterback, almost came back from 20 points down to win that game. Their defense couldn't stop anybody without Bobby Wagner on the field. Diggs was out too, but they were doing okay without Diggs. Once Wagner came out, the wheels fell off. So he still remains an indispensable player for that defense.
Well, indispensable, I think, is the perfect word to describe Bobby Wagner. I mean, he is fantastic in terms of getting the defense lined up. He's an unbelievable athlete, considering just his size, his athletic ability, his straight line speed, and then his instincts, his physicality, and getting off of blocks, his reliability, his open field tackler. I mean, you know, every box that a scout is asked to check at the linebacker position, Bobby Wagner not only is getting the check, he's getting the exclamation point. And so he has just been a terrific football player for such a long time. And I would agree with you again, Corbin. I didn't think that this was his best year. I mean, I thought that this was a significant drop off. But I also would agree, though, that schematically, Seattle did him no favors. They didn't do KJ Wright or Michael Kendricks any favors either. And it's not just schematically, in my opinion. It's just that the defensive line just didn't get it done a lot of times. I mean, whether it would be taking up blockers to keep the block, keep the offensive linemen off the linebackers in the running game, or not being able to hold blockers long enough to be able to create some pass rush opportunities when those linebackers came through and blitz opportunities. But I thought that Wagner proved himself to be absolutely a Pro Bowl caliber player, and led the NFL in tackles. I mean, that speaks for itself. But at the same time, just kind of switching gears, going to KJ Wright. I know that he had a career high in tackles in 2019. That to me is just so remarkable, considering the fact that he was coming off of the injury late the year before. Just for him to have career highs in tackles, this past season, I think, and to play every single game, including the playoffs, I think, again, it's just one of the – Seattle is just very lucky to have had two linebackers who have played at this level for as long as they have, and doing it together. To me, it's one of the more – just enjoyable, cool aspects about the Seahawks roster since John Schneider and Pete Carroll brought these guys in all those years ago.
It's the best story, in my opinion, for the 2019 Seahawks, seeing what KJ Wright did coming back from missing 11 regular season games the year before with a bulky knee. He did come back in the playoffs and played really well against the Cowboys, had that awesome interception in the end zone, and I think that is ultimately what led the Seahawks to giving him a new deal. When we were heading towards free agency, you, me, Nick Lee, all the people that write for Seahawk Maven, we were all in agreement that KJ Wright was probably going to be gone. The player himself thought he was going to be gone. And then, surprisingly, the Seahawks gave him that 2-year contract that really was a 1-year deal when you consider there's no guaranteed money in the second year of the contract. But with how he played, there's no doubt he's going to be in the starting lineup again in 2020. You mentioned the tackles. He also set career highs in passes defensed and interceptions. He had 11 passes defensed, 3 interceptions, 2 of those coming in a game in the middle of the season against the Philadelphia Eagles. So he had a spectacular season. And again, I love that you mentioned that there were some things that happened schematically that didn't necessarily help this team. The defensive line did not help the linebackers out, and yet Wagner and Wright put up really good numbers. I felt like KJ Wright had a phenomenal season considering what he was coming back from. And even Michael Kendricks, you mentioned the missed tackles. That was certainly an issue. There were some plays that he left in the field. But in 14 starts, he made 71 tackles. He had 3 sacks. This is a team that could not rush the passer. And really one of the best ways they could get after the quarterback was blitzing Michael Kendricks off the edge. And he was very effective at it. Also had an interception against the Falcons. So before he went down in that season finale with a torn ACL, yes, his season, he wasn't perfect. He made some mistakes, but I still thought Michael Kendricks was a very solid third starter at linebacker for this team.
No, absolutely he was. And you mentioned the 3 sacks, and I think that finished, what, second? You know, maybe third on Seattle's roster? I mean, so...
It really is pathetic, isn't it?
You know, I mean, but you're right. I mean, 3 sacks doesn't sound like much, but he had a lot of quarterback hurries. I mean, whether they were statistically listed or not, again, just using your eyes rather than somebody else's pen, to rank these things. But, Kendricks is very effective in that way. The positional versatility that he offers you, the ability to play 3 different linebacker positions, again, going back all the way to his college days, for a guy of his size to be as effective as he is off the edge as a pass rusher is pretty unique. And I think that that's one of the reasons why Seattle, of course, used their base defense so much. It wasn't just the reliability that is Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. I mean, again, I can just kind of ramble about what they've meant to this franchise over the last decade, but the unique element that is Michael Kendricks. I mean, that's why the Seattle stuck with them as much. Now, I mean, it did leave them vulnerable to those underneath little passes to backs, but when Seattle was tackling effectively, then this was still a pretty damn effective defense. And I think a big part of that was because of the linebacking position. And so, again, if Seattle can just get a little bit more effective play out of the defensive line, then I think that you're going to see a return to the dominator at the linebacker position. And then the same thing with the secondary. I think that you're going to see a big jump in the secondary in 2020 as well.
Yeah, when you consider the instability they had at safety, mixing in Tedrick Thompson, Lano Hill back there, Marquise Blair getting a few starts as a rookie, and then they traded for Diggs. I mean, there was a lot of moving parts in the secondary. The defensive line most of the year was ineffective getting after the quarterback, and yet these linebackers still put up really good numbers. I would love to see what that trio could do if Kendricks comes back. That's a huge if right now, coming off injury, being a free agent. He's still got some legal issues he's dealing with, but I'd love to see those three out there with that D-line playing at a more efficient, higher level, and of course, more stability in the secondary. And those three were not the only players that made an impact at linebacker. I think it's worth noting a couple other guys, most notably Cody Barton. He got to start 4 games for Kendricks, 2 of them when he was down with a hamstring injury, and then after he tore his ACL, he started both playoff games. You saw a lot of really, really good signs out there from the rookie, the third-round pick out of Utah. Showed off his coverage skills. Pete Carroll's talked about, raved about those coverage skills that he brings to the table. That former safety background is very evident. Had a couple passes defensed in the playoffs, a couple really close calls to interceptions. I still think he would have picked off 2 passes against the Panthers if not for his teammates swatting the ball at the line of scrimmage. If they would have just let the ball go through, he has easy interceptions. That's part of the luck of the game, but he was really good in pass coverage. His run defense, on the other hand, it was inconsistent, especially against the edge, and that was an issue for this defense as a whole. That's something he's really got to get better at moving forward if he's going to play more snaps for this defense.
He does. He's got to get stronger. Same with Ben Burkervin. I mean, they're both young linebackers who don't have the prototypical size anyway. And so they're going to have to get bigger and stronger. And that's something I expect. It's one of the reasons why I thought that it was a very astute move by Seattle to draft linebackers last year and be able to kind of get them into your program and get them a little bit stronger, draft them at, you mentioned Barton in the 3rd round, and then BBK, I believe, is in the 5th. You know, so the middle or late round selections, rather than investing the early draft picks at the linebacker position, when you already have 2 stars in Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. So to me, it's, again, something that I think that Seattle consistently does well is they kind of strike when the pan's hot, so to speak, as far as draft picks. And they could see that last year was a very good linebacker class, draft a couple of them and develop them, because you know that you have some linebackers getting a little bit old in the tooth and you'd want to develop them rather than wait until it's critical, like 2020 may be, with the pending free agency in the future, then draft them and develop them the right way.
That kind of goes to the argument I've been making at the running back position. Even though Penny and Carson are both coming back, Travis Homer's going to be back. Who knows what happens with Marshawn Lynch? That's a storyline to follow probably until the middle of the season. You don't even know when he's going to be coming back, if coming back at all. But I've been making the argument, draft a year ahead to get a running back with Carson heading into the final year of his contract, Penny coming off a torn ACL. The Seahawks are as good as any organization out there in trying to plan ahead when it comes to drafting. Don't just look at this season, we're looking at future seasons as well, and they've done a really nice job with that at linebacker, getting Barton and Ben Burkervin. And I'd be remiss not to mention Shaquem Griffin. I think he's certainly a player that is in Seattle's future plans. He's a guy that's going to be a situational player. I doubt that we're ever going to see him as a starter, but he certainly showed after he finally got the chance in Week 10 to be that situational rusher off the edge, that incredible speed, that rare speed that he brings to the table off the edge. He made 3 quarterback hits in the second half of the season. Then he gets that huge sack on Aaron Rodgers in the divisional round. It feels like he can really carve out a long-term role with this team and also be a big-time contributor on special teams now with how he played in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, longtime Seahawk fans are going to remember old number 97 Rufus Porter speed rusher off the edge. You know, that's kind of the role that I've always thought that Shaquem Griffin could be. Now, Griffin's a lot smaller player. You know, but at the same time, he has that just explosive first step to be able to get past the tackles. Now, he's not going to be able to hold up at the point of attack in the running game. You know that. But if you can just have like a true pass rush specialist, that's what I believe Griffin can be. Same kind of thing. He's got to get stronger. But at the same time, I think that he does have a more specific role this year for Seattle, and as well as being one of their best special teams defenders as well. We mentioned that with BBK and Cody Barton as well. Shaquem Griffin certainly is that for Seattle as well.
He's a guy that I could see getting more snaps at Sam linebacker too, especially if Kendricks is not back, because I still think Cody Barton is going to be at his best playing that weak side position that KJ Wright's playing. I think in the long run, that's where he's playing. There could still be a future for Griffin playing that Sam spot where he's going to play more on the edge, which fits his strengths more. So there could be a larger role down the road for him. I do think the issue is defending the run or something that are going to prevent him from being a full-time starter at any point, but he has certainly got a chance to carve out a valuable niche on this defense, and he can be a guy that can get after the quarterback. He missed out on sacks so many times where he was really close during the regular season. I could see him being a player that, if luck switches up a little bit, he could easily turn in a 6-7 sack season as a situational guy just because of that blazing speed, and you know that he's going to bring the effort every single play as well. Just getting to the NFL and being able to do what he's done is remarkable. Coming up next in the third quarter, we're going to continue breaking down Seattle's free agent class. We're switching to the offensive line with a capsule on tackle Jermaine Ifedi. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with Rob Rang. Yesterday, we kicked off our extensive Seahawks free agent discussion by looking at Jaron Reed. We'll be looking at many other unrestricted and restricted free agents over the next several weeks, leading up to the start of the league year on March 18th. Up next, a player who has arguably been the biggest lightning rod for fans on this team the past 4 years. Rob, that's Jermaine Ifedi.
It is Jermaine Ifedi, you know, and it seems like ever since that he was made a first-round draft selection, then he has been somebody that that Seattle fans have just kind of decided that they didn't like. Now, there's no question that he's given up a lot of penalties, as far as his false starts especially, which I know that are very frustrating. At the same time, I would argue this is one of the biggest, strongest, most durable offensive linemen in all the NFL. That he is very effective as a run blocker. He is an improving pass blocker. I think that people are going to be stunned by how much money he is going to be offered, likely by a different team, because I think that he is going to want to wait until free agency and see what offers are available to him. And again, I think that Jermaine Ifedi, I've mentioned this many times in the past, I think that he likely has played his last game in Seattle, and all those people who are criticizing Ifedi are going to be even more disappointed, I think, when they have to deal with a potential replacement, especially if it's a rookie, just because it is difficult to play right tackle in the NFL, especially especially when you have a quarterback who is as squirrely in the pocket as Russell Wilson is.
If I'm advising a player like Ifedi, there's no way that I'm having him sign a contract before free agency starts. Go test the market. Go see your value. You only get so many opportunities to do that. Clowney can tell you all about that. He's been waiting a couple years to hit the free agent market, and a lot of times those big names don't get the opportunity to because of franchise tags and things of that nature. But this is a great opportunity for Ifedi to really test what he's worth in a market that has been very kind to even serviceable tackles the past few years. I'm just looking at some of the contracts that have been dished out the last few years here, Rob. The Cardinals gave Justin Pugh a four-year, $45 million contract in 2018. He's mostly played guard for them instead of tackle. He was 28 when he signed that contract, got $15.75 million guaranteed, almost $9 million per year. That same offseason, Nate Solder, longtime starter for the Patriots, a solid player, but never had been a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro. He gets a four-year, $62 million deal, average $15.5 million per year. He's been a disappointment his two seasons since signing that contract in New York. They signed him when he was 30 years old, too. So now he's getting to be a little older player. And Chris Hubbard got a contract with the Browns, 5 years, $36.5 million, over $7 million per year. And if Chris Hubbard's getting that kind of a deal, then what the heck is Jermaine Ifedi, a guy that has started 4 years in the NFL? He's been a full-time starter. He's been durable. He's just got so many things working for him right now. He's only going to turn 26 this offseason, so he's in the midst of his prime. He's made tremendous strides under Mike Solari the last 2 years. He has first-round pedigree, hasn't missed many games. As I mentioned, the durability factor is huge here. And this market just doesn't offer many options away from him and Jack Conklin that check off a number of those categories. And you had a player that was taken out of the mix a couple days ago. The Cardinals gave DJ Humphreys a three-year, $45 million extension, $15 million per year for a player that hasn't been great and has missed a ton of games due to injury. At least Ifedi's got that working for him. He's been available. He's been rock solid. He's been durable. He's improved. If Humphreys is getting $15 million before even going onto the market, then I can only imagine Ifedi's going to get similar money thrown at him from teams that are desperate for tackle help. This is a perfect market for him. Not many other options. He is going to get paid.
Exactly. He's going to get paid. Remember a year ago when Dallas gave DeMarcus Lawrence that big deal, and then Seattle realized that they were not going to be able to give Frank Clark a similar type of contract, and it led to, of course, Clark being traded. I think that's a similar kind of situation you're going to have here, except, of course, Seattle doesn't own Ifedi's rights, so they're not going to be able to trade him. I think that the deal just signed by Arizona, as you just mentioned, that deal, I think, is going to just pretty much eliminate any real chance that Seattle is going to be able to come to a contract agreement with Ifedi. He's going to get onto the free agent market. He's probably going to get a deal that's going to be in excess of $15 million per season. And I just don't think that Seattle is going to be willing to pay that price. And so we've been kind of talking about this before, that I look at some of the different offense, the right tackles specifically there on the market. I mean, Brian Bulaga from Green Bay is a good player. He's just never healthy. Darrell Williams from Carolina is also a good player. He's also a struggle with durability. You mentioned Jack Conklin, but he's the only one who has the combination of durability and age.
His ACL a few years ago, so it's not like he hasn't had an injury.
Exactly. And like Ifedi, he plays in a run-based offense. If you suddenly put him into New England or somewhere like that, some of these quarterback or these offensive tackle needy teams that are out there, like, say, the New York Jets or the New York Giants, who are trying to build around young quarterbacks, then, these guys are going to struggle. And so I think the one thing that is working against Ifedi is the fact that, I mentioned this before, this is a terrific rookie class of right tackles. The team that is going to throw Ifedi a lot of money obviously has other things that they're looking to address in the draft. But because this draft is so good at offensive tackles, I do believe that Seattle is in a good position to potentially replace him if they're willing to invest a very early draft pick. That's why I have him going with an offensive tackle in the first round of my mock draft.
Yeah, this is a great class for tackles, but this is another caveat that I'm going to throw in here, and you and I both know there's a number of factors that have impacted this. I can't put a finger on what has had the greatest impact, but teams in the NFL are having a much tougher time now developing offensive linemen. In my personal opinion, I think one of the biggest reasons that that's been the case is you're seeing more offenses at the college and high school level that are going to spread offensive attacks, and I just don't feel like as many of these offensive linemen are coming into the league ready to play in the NFL and the offenses that many of these teams still run. Even the teams that are running some spread principles, these linemen are coming in and they're not prepared. And what that has led to is teams being in a position where, well, we just drafted a tackle 2 years ago and it hasn't worked out. The player hasn't been ready. The player hasn't improved. We need to splurge in free agency to fix that hole, to put a Band-Aid over that hole. Just look at the contracts last year. The Raiders gave Trent Brown a 4-year, $66 million deal. Juwan James got a 4-year, $52 million contract from the Broncos. And that's a cautionary tale for any team that wants to spend a bunch of money on a pedestrian tackle. He played in 3 games last year for the Denver Broncos, but that is not going to stop teams from throwing that money. They need linemen. They need help at the tackle position. There aren't many tackles out there that check off all the boxes I mentioned, being young, durable, improving, high upside with that first round pedigree. There's only a couple of those guys that are available on the market. And do you want to take that risk and try to develop tackles? Yes, this is a great offensive line class, but the last few years indicate, like I said, it's just much tougher to develop those players. So there's going to be a team or two at least that is going to shell out that money. We've seen the money that's getting thrown to these guys. Effetti just has too many things working in his favor not to get that kind of money. He's going to strike gold.
No, he is. As I mentioned, I think Carolina, Green Bay, the Giants, the Jets, the Chargers, those are just some of the teams off the top of my head that I think are going to be very interested in Effetti. And if they don't address a tackle in free agency, then again, I think that they're going to be looking for off the tackles early in the draft, which could potentially impact Seattle as well. While there are a bunch of tackles that are going to be available in the draft and some very good ones at that, at the same time, you have a more of a proven product here in Jermaine Effetti. And so, again, I think that we're going to see Effetti be one of the bells of the ball, so to speak, in the free agency market. I think he's going to be wine and dined by a lot of different teams out there, and for good reason, because he has been as effective as he has. And one last thing, I hear people sometimes that criticize offensive tackles so much just because of the false starts. You know, when you play in an environment, especially when you're on the road, just how loud it is, and your right tackle position, just like the left tackle position, you're the farthest out. I mean, it is very difficult to hear the snap count, and I just have never understood why more people aren't a little bit sympathetic to how difficult that would be for a tackle. And again, especially trying to block for a quarterback like Russell Wilson, who is such he's so maneuverable, but at the same time, he's also so inconsistent with where he moves that it would be very difficult to block for him. I think that Effetti, like James Carpenter before, is going to get a lot of money, and he's going to wind up being a very successful blocker for another team. And again, Seattle fans are going to, those who criticize Effetti are going to be wishing they had him a year from now.
I've been hammering the table for months about this, and this is probably, I'll probably reference it again before March 18th gets here, because we'll be talking about Effetti and the rest of their free agents throughout the next month before these players have the opportunity to finally test the market and either sign back with the Seahawks or go to another team. But you look at what he did this past season. He had a rough start to the year. He gave up 3 sacks in the first 5 games. But after that point, really the turning point was the game in Cleveland when he was going against his former teammate, Myles Garrett. He played outstanding football in that game, keeping Myles Garrett away from Russell Wilson. And after that point, he gave up just 3 sacks the entire rest of the season. I went back and watched all the film to double check compared to some of these other these media outlets that have statistics. And that is exactly what happened. He only gave up 3 sacks. Were there some other pressures? Absolutely. You're going to give up pressures in this league, though. These tackles are not perfect. They're going to get beat sometimes. And he had some whiffs in the run game. Every offensive lineman does. But when you look at the improvements that he made in pass protection, yes, he still had 13 penalties. A lot of them were being false starts. You can live with some false starts occasionally. 5-yard penalties, you don't want them. You want your players to be disciplined. But like you said, it's difficult. I just think when you look at what he's done the last 2 years under Mike Solari, there is no question in my mind this kid's best football is in front of him, and he's been ascending the last couple years. He's still made his mistakes. He's still not a top 10 tackle, but he might get paid like it because that's just the way the market has been for tackles the last 3 or 4 years. And with how many teams out there need help on the offensive line, there will be plenty of suitors that are going to be bidding for his services, given all the factors I've mentioned, the youth, the improvements, being a first-round player, being healthy. There will be teams lining up to sign him. You, like you mentioned, whining and dining. So I think the Seahawks are going to have to look at who's going to be their next starting right tackle. Maybe George Fant's going to be that guy. We'll talk about his situation next week. But even George Fant in this market is going to get an opportunity to get paid. So it looks like the Seahawks are going to be in a position where they're going to need to figure out who's going to be their starting right tackle. It's going to be somebody new next year, most likely, going into 2020. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on our podcast, you can contact me, LockSeahawks@gmail.com. Subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it is draft season after all, which means one thing. John Schneider is probably looking for ways to add picks in the draft. We'll bust out a mid-February trade machine, looking at some potential trade down options, plus a look at Seattle's specialists. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks!